Who's out there?
Hi, little cub. Oh no, don't be scared. I'm not gonna hurt you. Are you alone out here?
I'm waiting for a friend. He should be here soon.
We should never be alone. I'll keep you safe.
Who are you?
Ka. I know what you are. I know where you came from. Would you like to see?
Yeah.
Mostly men stay in their village, but sometimes they travel. And when they do, their caves breathe in the dark. They call it the Red Flower. It brings warmth and light and destruction to all that it touches.
Who is that?
The traveler protecting his cub. Shere Khan ended the man's life. The panther found the cub. And that cub was you.
I want him dead.
The jungle is no longer safe. I'll return him to where he belongs.
If you send him back to the man village, they'll ruin him. They'll make a man out of him.
You will always be my son.
I'm Mowgli!
All right, well, who's ready for At the Movies this year? Yeah. I tell you what, how many of us have seen The Jungle Book out of curiosity? Yeah, interesting. You know, this was not even on my radar as one of our movies until it literally is the number three grossing movie of the year so far. You know why we really wanted to do Jungle Book? Because, I mean, when else do you get to sing Guns N' Roses, right? I mean, come on. I mean, if we can't, you know, hit the movie, at least we can do the song. But, you know, it's really fascinating. Which, didn't the band, like, nail that this morning? Man, I tell you what. I don't know that you can go anywhere else that you can hear Guns N' Roses in a church setting. But, you know, these things tie in really big to what we're talking about today. And The Jungle Book, it really was a fascinating movie. I know we think it's a kid's movie. I tell you what, my wife and I walked out and said, man, this is not a kid's movie. And there are some huge religious overtones, spiritual overtones throughout this entire movie. Of course, you know, Mowgli, as you saw in that trailer there, is his father is killed while they're traveling through the jungle. And so he's raised, Mowgli is raised by a den of wolves. He's a man cub, and he's in the jungle. And he, one of the things that he continues to realize is that, you know, he doesn't really belong to a people group. And even though the den of wolves have kind of helped raise him, he still has this sense of being accountable to something bigger than himself. And there's this really pinnacle moment in the film where Mowgli does something that creates, you know, mass destruction for the entire jungle. And it impacts, you know, numbers of species. In fact, one of the species that is impacted are the elephants. And this is kind of fascinating in the film. And, you know, there's all kinds of religious people that got their panties in a bunch over this. It doesn't bother me. But, like, the elephants are kind of referred to as God in the film. It talks about how the elephants forged the creation and their tusks kind of, you know, chiseled the mountains. And it kind of like they're the creators of the universe, which to me it's just an analogy. I mean, there's a lot of analogy in this film. But the very, one of the very species, the element, The the elephants who are impacted by this bad decision by Mowgli are actually the ones who in the end bring redemption and healing to everything. And so, you know, this is chocked full with, you know, with spiritual overtones. And I'm not going to tell you too much more because I don't want to give the movie away. But I tell you what, it was a very, very fascinating film. And as we think about this whole idea of, you know, being in a place where we do something that creates massive damage, we've all been there, right? We've all made messes. We've created messes. Mowgli, he finds himself in the middle of a hot mess. I mean, he literally creates a hot mess. And sometimes we find ourselves there, and it's like the destruction is so large that we don't know what to do. And it's only in those moments that we begin to realize, if we haven't realized it already, that we're accountable to something bigger. And there's a force greater going on around us that's even more vast than what we have the capability of doing. So that's where we're going to kind of jump off this morning. In fact, there's a phrase that you've probably heard. You've probably said this phrase like dozens, hundreds of times. You may not know the history of it because it's been around longer than all of us. But here's the phrase. It's the phrase hot mess. Anybody like the phrase hot mess? Anybody throw that around all the time? Yeah, well, do you know where it came from? Anybody know the origin of this word back in the 19th century? Anybody? No? All right, well, in the 19th century, it came onto the scene. It was a military term referring to a cafeteria, you know, the mess hall, and soldiers would say, well, we're going to have a hot mess. All right, it meant they're having a hot meal in the mess hall. And then in the 20th century, it kind of evolved a bit, and it was still used in a military context, and soldiers, when they kind of, you know, got caught in a battle or a firefight, would say, oh, we just stumbled into a hot mess, so it was a dangerous environment. And then in the 21st century, we kind of changed it a bit, you know, with the evolution of the word hot, and hot mess has become an attractive disaster. All right, that's what we refer to as a hot mess. Some of you are a hot mess because people look at you and they're like, man, they're a hot mess. And yet, there's something attractive about it. It's like you hold it together just enough. You know, we all do this, right? I mean, we all have showed up at work or showed up at school and things aren't going well in our life, and yet we put a smile on and you know, we look somewhat functional and we do this. And yet, you know, we're a hot mess, right? I mean, and we're attractive in it as well. And some of you, this is why you don't like coming to church very often. Because, you know, you show up here and you're like, man, everybody just seems happy. I mean, they seem to have it all together. Well, let me assure you, if you feel that way this morning, there are dozens, hundreds of people in this room, row after row of hot messes surrounding you, all right? Every single one of us, if we're not there right now, we have been. We just clean up pretty well, all right? And so this is the nature of a hot mess. And the mess could be something, you know, in your finances. You might be saying, man, my finances are a hot mess. I mean, I've got myself in all kinds of debt. You know, maybe it has something to do with a family mess you're dealing with. Maybe there's something in your, you know, your marriage or your family life that's just not going the way that you know it should be going, and yet you're not sure where to go with it. You know, maybe it's a health thing. Maybe there's, you know, you just haven't been taking care of yourself. Or maybe it's something outside of what you can control. Let's be honest, some of you married a hot mess, all right? And like you were warned. I mean, you know, like his last three girlfriends sat down with you and were like, honey, listen, you should not marry him. And you're like, I'm marrying him, I'm going to fix him. And because see, what you didn't realize is you fix dogs, you don't fix your spouse, all right? That's like, that was last month's message, all right? So we try to fix him or her. And, you know, some of us married into a hot mess, right? I mean, you couldn't figure out why she didn't want you to meet her family. I mean, you just couldn't figure out every time they showed up. You happened to be out of town. And then all of a sudden, they showed up unexpectedly. And you ran into them. You're like, now I know. You know, she was wanting to protect me from all of this. You know, for some of us, you're being parented by a hot mess right now. Now, don't raise your hands if that's you. Especially my kids over here in the front. But, you know, you're being parented. Some of you are parenting a hot mess. And don't raise your hands on that either, all right? You're glad that you're sitting in rows in here and your kids are somewhere else in the building, all right? Because you're parenting a hot mess. You know, some of us are in the place where you're just super blessed because you are between messes right now. You know, maybe you like wrapped up a mess 6 months ago. I mean, there's something financial or marriage-wise, something going on, and you kind of wrapped that up and you brought it to a close and you've moved on. And yet, one of the things we all know is that we're, in most cases, just one decision away from the next mess. I mean, it's life. It's the thing that we all have in common, whether you're Christian, you know, atheist, Jewish, whatever you know, you are, you know, the one thing we have in common is life is just messy. Now, I've got some good news for you, all right? Here's the good news. there's always somebody that's a little more of a mess than you are right around the corner, all right? Now that's like somewhat good news, but here's the better news. The reason we connect with this is because it's not just you. I mean, when it comes to the messes of life, it's not just me. And it's not just your life, your marriage, your relationships, your finances. This is why we connect with things like the Jungle Book. I mean, Mowgli finds himself multiple times in a hot mess, and there's something that happens in that moment, and he doesn't even realize it's happening, but he begins to sense that there's something bigger going on. He begins to sense that there's something bigger that he's accountable to that actually is trying to draw him to an entirely different place. And so, you know, some of the things I hope we see this morning is, you know, sometimes we make messes, and sometimes we can't get out of them on our own. In fact, sometimes our messes help us see that we need people around us. And then oftentimes, you know, we sometimes get into holes so deep that, you know, we're like, man, I've dug my own hole. I don't know what to do here. And it's only in those moments that we begin to open up to the reality that there's something bigger than us. So we're going to kind of track on that today, and we're going to look at a guy from the Bible by the name of the Apostle Paul, who kind of introduces this whole idea of life being messy to us. And Paul's a guy who wrote more of the New Testament portion of the Bible than any other person in history. Paul is a guy who hated Christians until he became one. In fact, his mission was to kill Christians. He grew up in the Jewish culture, and he thought, you know, Christians, people who were followers of Christ, followers of the way of Christ, were like distorting the message of God. And so he was out to destroy them until he became one. And so Paul is like incredibly educated. He's very connected. He studied at the best schools. He knows multiple languages. And he goes into all kinds of extraordinary, minute detail about all these high-level theological things, all right? And he's the first person that introduces this idea of when we find ourselves in the messes of life, when we realize, man, I am in a hot mess right here, and we kind of begin to see what God does and how we're to respond in those, all right? And this is something Mowgli experiences in the Jungle Book, all right? I don't want to give this. How many of you plan to see this Jungle Book out of curiosity? Okay, I'm not going to give it away then. All right, so you know, one of the things we realize is we mess up from time to time. This is why we connect with movies like this. And when we mess up, this begins to become the portal or the lens or the window through which we oftentimes begin to discover God. And so this is what I want us to pursue today. So let me break down what Paul says here a little bit. Paul's incredibly intelligent. Sometimes he's way out there, hard to understand. Here's where he begins. Romans chapter 3, verse 19. And this is also in the Crosspoint app if you want to follow along under the Bible button, or you can follow along on the screens. He says, "Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law." Now this is like a fancy way of saying, if you're under the law, that means there's a law over you. Which means, like, if you're an American citizen, then that means the American Constitution is over you, so you are under the American Constitution. Or, you know, if you, like, just, you know, signed up to go to a university this fall, you just signed your contract, you know, to attend a university, that means you're under the laws of that university now. Now, I'm not under the law of the university because I didn't sign a contract. But if you signed a contract, that means that university is now over you. So Paul's saying whatever law you are under, that law is over you. And he's specifically talking here about the laws of God. All right, now let's like tease this out a little bit. See, the laws of God can be a number of things. So if you're Jewish, then the laws of God are the Old Testament, all the 700 and some, you know, laws of the Old Testament. If you're a Christian, if you're a Christ follower, that means you're going by the laws of Jesus, which Jesus' main thing is, I want you to treat others and love others the way you want to be treated and the way I have treated you. So that's the law of Jesus. Jesus says, I want you to fall under this. Now, it can be broader than that. It can be like the law of your conscience. All right, it can be like things you self-impose or that you just feel like you're to be following. Like, for instance, men, women, you don't know this, but men have an unwritten law that when you walk into a restroom, you don't pee in a urinal next to another guy. All right, you like pick two down. And that's like a law of conscience. I mean, it's like you know it's there, and yet, I don't know, my dad never told me that. You just know it's the right thing to do. All right, and so now here's the interesting thing. For Mowgli, by the way, there's the law of the jungle. And he has a sense that he's to abide by the law of the jungle, though it's not really ever fully been explained to him. And so so here's what's interesting. We all have this in common, all right? All of us, because we've all found ourselves in messes at one point or another. All of us at different points fall short of the standard. right? Whether that's God's standard or it's law of conscience or some standard we've imposed. Listen, some of you can't even keep your own standard, right? You're like, man, I'm going to work out 5 times a week and you only hit 3. And yet you've made that law and yet you can't hit your own standard. And so whatever the standard is, we all fall short of that standard, that overarching law that we impose or God imposes from time to time. And when we mess up, you know, when we miss it, when we don't hit the mark, you know, somebody catches us, whether it's a parent or a spouse or our employer, you know, whoever it is, and we get busted. And then we say this phrase when we get busted, all right? And you've said this phrase, all right? When you've not hit the mark, you've mouthed this phrase, you've said it hundreds of times, and here's what we say. We say this thing, we go, well, nobody's. Yeah, so you know the phrase, right? You get it, right? So here's the thing. You get in trouble with your parents, you know, kids, and you're like, well, Mom, nobody's perfect. I mean, I'm not going to be good all the time. I hear that all the time. And, or you don't get a report in at work. And you say to your supervisor, you're like, man, I do it almost every week. I missed it once. I mean, nobody's perfect. And here's what's so cool about this phrase. When you say this, all right, when you acknowledge this, all right, and you don't even know that you're doing this, all right, but this is transformational. This is huge right here. The fact that when we say that phrase, nobody's perfect. I didn't mean to make the mistake. I mean, I usually do it right. And I know I said I was going to stop that habit. I know I've told you 1,000 times I'm going to stop. And I know I have. Nobody's perfect. When we say that nobody's perfect, we're saying there is a perfect. We're in essence saying there is a standard. There is a law. There is something higher than what I'm accomplishing. There's a formula. There's an ethic. There's a morality. And so whenever we say the phrase, nobody's perfect, we're actually saying there's something going on that's bigger that I'm currently not. And this is kind of like a subtle way that we begin to realize that we have an accountability to something that's way bigger than us. That is a way higher standard than the way that we live. And so Paul, he goes on here in verse 19, and he says, now we know that whatever the law says, whatever that thing is that's over us, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be, what's that word there? Silenced. He's saying every mouth may be silenced, and that and then this is like the everybody part right here. This is like the all skate, everybody on the skate floor right here, that the whole world would be held accountable to God. And so what Paul's saying here is there is a law that we're all aware of in some specific way or some general way that we all feel an accountability to. And Paul says the good news is it's not about making you perfect. Nobody's going to be perfect in this. He says the point isn't that you would feel bad or feel like, oh man, I got to go perfect myself so I can always live up to it. He says no. He'd say the point of the mess, the point of the tension, the point of when we find ourselves in those places where like, man, I'm a hot mess or she's a hot mess or they're a hot mess is that we would be silenced. That our mouths would be, because we'd look at them and we'd go, oh man, they're a hot mess. But you know, I've been there. I've been in that same situation. Or they would look at you and they would be silenced instead of judging you because they're like, man, I fall short of that as well. He says that every mouth would be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God. Like we have no room to talk because we all fall short. Because we all realize there's a conscience, there's something, there's some accountability, whether it's self-imposed or God-imposed. And then he goes on to say this. Paul says, therefore, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. In other words, God's not going to look at you and be like, man, you are so good just on your own. He says, you know, he's never going to say that. You're good enough. He says, there's nothing you can do to become righteous. And then here's the point. All right, this is amazing right here. He says, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. Rather, through the law, we become conscious. We become aware of our sin. We become aware of our failure. We become aware of, man, we have this tendency to get in a hot mess. So the laws make us conscious to the things that we don't do. It's one of the reasons some of you don't go to church very often, perhaps. It's one of the reasons maybe some of you have bailed on church for a while, perhaps. Because nobody likes to be reminded of how I'm not measuring up. Nobody likes to be reminded of what I ought to be doing, even though I'm not doing it. And yet, we can't escape it. So I know for me, when I read the New Testament, I'm like, I read and I'm like, oh man, I don't nearly love my neighbors the way that I should. Or when I read the New Testament or, you know, kind of look at what God, you know, calls me to, the laws, the things he wants me to do, I'm like, man, you know, I don't forgive quickly enough. I need to be quicker in forgiving. Or I'm not nearly doing what I need to be doing for my family and the way God wants me to treat and respond in certain situations. I'm reminded. I mean, these things always remind me of how I'm not quite measuring up. And the scripture says it's just a mirror. I mean, these things aren't to make us feel guilty or bad. When we find ourselves in a hot mess and we look around and we're like, man, I'm not measuring up right here. It's not to feel bad about it. It's just to remind us and make us conscious that there's something bigger that God calls us to. So let me ask you a question. And this is kind of an interesting question. It's kind of a difficult question as well. It makes us a little uncomfortable. But what does the law that you're under, whatever that might be, whether it's God's law, scripture, you know, if you're into Jesus, if it's your own conscious law you've created, if you've, you know, I'm going to work out 6 times a week, whatever it is, you know, what does that law that you're under remind you that you're not? I think about that for a moment. What does the law that you live under, whether it's being an American citizen, Canadian citizen, the law of working out, you know, the law of when I go into a bathroom, I shouldn't, you know, stand next to another guy to urinate on me, whatever that law is, what does that law remind you of that you are not currently doing? And isn't it kind of heartbreaking sometimes when we think about what we ought to be doing? I mean, isn't it like we kind of think about the same things over and over again, like, you know, I should be able to get away from that habit. I mean, I know that relationship is really, really damaging to me and to them, and yet I can't get out of it. And that addiction that you just can't kick, I mean, I know I should be able to kick it, but I can't. Or you've told your husband or your wife 1,000 times, I'm going to start something or I'm going to stop something, and yet you keep doing it. Or you tell your parents over and over, I'm not doing that anymore. Yet you're lying to them because you're still doing it. I mean, what is that law that you're under, that you're accountable to, and what is it reminding you that you're not? Because in that moment, you're experiencing the law for the exact reason God gave it. Because he says it's a mirror. It's to make you aware. It's not to like feel terrible or bad or, oh, I'm a very bad person. I mean, my life's just a wreck and God can... No, it's to make us aware that God actually calls us to something more. So in verse 23, 3 verses later, Paul, he actually kind of gives us his bottom line. He gets right to the point in verse 23. You've probably heard this before. You may have even said this before. He says, for all, because this is again an all skate. This is like everybody. It doesn't matter if you're religious or not religious, atheist or Christian. He says, for all have sinned. Now, that's a really big God word right there. In fact, we're like, Paul, man, could you explain that a little bit? What does it mean to sin? He's like, yeah, I'll explain it to you, and I'll give you kind of another picture of it. He says, for all have sinned, and all fall short, because that's what it means to sin. It means to fall short or to miss the mark. All fall short of the glory of God. See, what he's saying is not only do you fall short of your own standards. Now, let's forget God for a moment, all right? I know you don't hear that in church very often. Let's forget God. Listen, Kirk, I can't even like live up to my own standards, right? I mean, every now and then I'll walk in the bathroom, I'll stand right next to a guy, start talking to him at the urinal, and there's like a whole row of urinals open. I mean, I can't even live up to the thing I know I'm supposed to do. Or my workout scheduler, you know, I'm going to eat only, you know, 600 calories a meal, and I'm like going on 1,500, and it's only breakfast. I mean, I can't even like live up to my standards. And so if there's a God, I mean, how in the world am I going to live up to his standards? Right? See, he's reminding us that when I see a mess or when I'm in a mess, when I'm living a hot mess, I'm like, I don't know how to get out. He's reminding us that there's a higher standard. And how do we know that? It's because the reference point is the unmess, right? The reference point is the unmess. We know what our marriage should look like, even though we're not living it. We know what that relationship should look like, even though we're not living it. We know what our finances should look like, even though we're not living it. We know what healthy living looks like, even though we still have an addiction. See, we know these things, and so the reference for the unmess actually helps us see that, man, I'm in a mess. And Paul says, and this may be the moment for you right here, right, Paul says, your awareness, when we get in those moments where we realize, man, I've just made a mess right here, it's that moment that awakens us to to something outside of ourselves to which we are accountable. It's only in that moment do we begin to realize, man, there's a standard way bigger than what I'm hitting. And it's maybe for some of us the first time we begin to realize there's a God who's calling me to that standard. And this is what happens for Mowgli. I mean, he creates this mess that has vast devastation. And yet he knows that's not what he should be doing. And see, our spiritual inclination is just to try harder and harder. Right? We're like, oh, I'm just going to try harder. Paul's like, no, that's not the point. The point isn't, you know, that you just go out and try to be a better and better person. He says, God's actually speaking to you. He's trying to make you aware in those moments that there's something outside of you, bigger than you, to which you're accountable. Now, I want to tell you about another guy that came along hundreds and hundreds of years later. And this was after the Apostle Paul. In fact, it was more recent. It was a guy by the name of C.S. Lewis. And C.S. Lewis was a scholar, he was a teacher, he was a philosopher, he was an incredible thinker. He was a guy who became a Christian in his adult life. He wasn't a Christian in his early life. You may know him through many of the books that he wrote, the Chronicles of Narnia and the like. And one of his best and maybe most well-known books is a tiny little book by the name of Mere Christianity. And if you haven't read Mere Christianity, you ought to go get it. It's a real thin little book. It's very difficult to read. I mean, because he's like super intelligent and I'm not. You might be, but that, for me, it was like two pages at a time. And so here's what he does in Mere Christianity. In the very first chapter, he talks about this whole idea of this standard beyond what I'm currently aware of when I find myself in a difficult situation. And he talks about it a little differently. He talks about it in terms of watching two people quarrel. All right, now that's a word we don't hear very often, right? You ought to throw that out when your kids are fighting later this afternoon and go, kids, stop quarreling. You know what they're going to do? They're going to stop. They're going to go, huh? What's that? You know, because we're like, stop fighting, stop arguing. Somebody after first service told me that's a southern word. You say it, quarreling. So quit quarreling. So he says, you know, he must have been southern. He's like, here's what happens. And this is the thing that opened him up to Jesus. This is the thing that opened him up to the reality that maybe this whole God thing has some substance to it. I mean, because he tried as a philosopher to go down that route. He tried as a thinker to steer away from spiritual things, but he couldn't get away from this. So here's what he said. He said, when I watch two people quarrel, here's what I'm aware of. He said, there are two people that are quarreling or arguing with one another, appealing to a standard that they did not create, and yet they cannot escape. And so what he means by that, he says, I watch two people quarrel, and one of them will be like, well, that's not fair. And the other will say, well, no, that's fair. Or you're not sensitive. Well, no, I'm sensitive. Or, you know, you're not paying attention to me. No, I'm paying attention to you. Well, you're not coming home on time. Well, no, I'm trying to come home on time. So, I mean, they're appealing to some standard which they didn't create and yet to which they can't escape. And it just bugged him when he watched this happen. In fact, he said, you know, rarely do I see two people quarrel and hear one of them say to hell with the standard. You know, screw the standard. Oh, no, who cares about honorable? Who cares about being sensitive? I mean, he literally says, you know, that never happens. In other words, nobody's jettisoning on the standard. He says it's like there's a standard that both have just voluntarily agreed to, and yet they're appealing to it, and yet they can't get out from under it. And he said what usually happens is, you know, one person's trying to show how they're actually keeping the standard better than the other person thinks they are, or whether, you know, or better than the other person is, or they try to convince the other person why they came up short. Well, I came up short because of this, or I was late because of that. And so he's like, this bugged me. He talks about how this just bugs him that there's this standard that people are sent to that they didn't create, and yet they can't get out from under. In fact, he went on, he said, why is it all over the world? He said, this is true in every single culture. We saw it in the Jungle Book. If you see the Jungle Book, I'd encourage you to see the Jungle Book. There's a standard, there's a law of the jungle that Mowgli has to attend to. And he says, there's this thing that we just can't get out from under, because if we could, we would. And so in the first chapter of Mere Christianity, here's what he says. He says, the law of gravity tells you what stones do if you drop them. And so he basically, in the book, goes on later to talk about how, you know, the law of gravity just tells you if you do certain things, then this is what's going to happen. And he says, you know, that's why like a pilot can fly a plane or a jet and do the same thing over and over every time they fly, because the law of gravity basically works the same every single time. He says, that's why people can perfect their golf swing, because the law of gravity is not changing every 30 minutes. All right, so you can do the same thing over and over, and you can generally know that, you know, the same result's going to happen. And so that, he said, that's why if you drop a stone, everybody know what's going to happen, right? It's going to hit the ground. Yeah, it's not going to hit the sky. It's going to hit the ground. And so he says, but the law of human nature tells you what human beings ought to do and do not. And so the law of human nature says, if you are kind and if you're gentle and if you do good, that makes things go better. And the law of human nature says, if you eat right, then that makes life go better. And the law of human nature says, you know, if you refuse to get addicted to anything, then that makes life go better. In other words, the law of human nature are unlike anything else in the whole universe. He says that when it comes to the law of human nature, we know exactly what to do, but we don't do it. And it bugged him. As a non-Christian, as somebody who wasn't a believer in God, it bugged him. So he said, human beings all over the earth have this curious idea that they ought to behave in a certain way and cannot really get rid of it. He's like, I never see people like jettison the standard. Nobody's like, oh, sensitivity is overrated. It's stupid. I shouldn't be sensitive. He's like, you know, nobody's ever saying honoring your spouse, well, that's stupid. I don't need to do that. He says, no, they actually appeal to this standard. It's like he says, you know, it's like there's this heart sense, this passion that's just placed in us that we realize there's something more. And then he caps it off. And this is the thing that drove him to becoming a Christian. It really opened him up to the idea of there being a God. He says, there is something above and beyond the ordinary facts. Let me say that again. There is something above and beyond the ordinary facts of man's behavior, and yet quite definitely real, meaning it's not something we imagine, it's not something we've manufactured, but which we find, and I love this next phrase, but which we find pressing on us. We find pressing on us. Now, don't miss this right here. Right? Don't miss this. What he's saying, this is so powerful. What he's saying is when you find yourself in a hot mess and you look at your life and you're going, oh my word, this is bad, this is wrong, I don't know how to get out of this, but I shouldn't be here. You know that because your reference point is the unmess. But that pressure you feel, what C.S. Lewis is talking about, what Paul is talking about, what Mowgli experienced in the movie, it says there's a pressure of ought when we find ourselves in those situations, that my life ought to be in a different place. And he says, and this is what C.S. Lewis is trying to help us see, and this is what Paul's trying to help us see, that pressure that you feel is the gracious pressure of God. That's God saying, hey, let me just call you forward to something more, because what you're experiencing isn't what it's supposed to be. And he says, when we acknowledge that in the middle of that mess, man, this isn't the way it's supposed to be, there's a standard that I'm not hitting. He's basically saying, you're like an inch away from acknowledging God in that moment. You might be thinking, well, God's not even here. No, you're actually an inch away from acknowledging, because there's a God who has a standard and a presence. And he's not making us feel bad. He's not making us feel guilty. He's just reminding us. He's making us aware in our conscience that there's something bigger. And so, that's some pretty heavy stuff right there, right? That's some pretty heady stuff. I want to land a little more practical this morning, all right? So here's what I want us to do. The thing we have in common is the mess, right? We all know the mess. We've all been a hot mess. We're maybe one decision away from a hot mess. And so, you know, whether you're Christian, non-Christian, atheist, wherever you fall on this spectrum, this is why we connect with these movies, because every single movie has a mess, has a problem, has a situation that we find ourselves in, and we realize there's something that's not going right, there's something that needs to go in a new direction. And so here's what I want us to try this week, all right? So you can take out your connection cards, and there's some next steps on the back, and a couple of these are just practical, you know, like if you want to, you're just here for the first time, maybe your next step's coming back next weekend, or maybe, you know, inviting a friend just to, you know, you're looking for an opportunity to invite them to Cross Point. But here's what I want us to try. And this is a little bit weird, but it'd be cool if you say this out loud this week, all right? This week when you're in the office, maybe tomorrow somebody comes in and you're like, there he goes again. He had a hot mess of a weekend. He's telling us all about it. You know, instead of judging him, instead of being critical on him, I want you to say this phrase under your breath, just kind of whisper. I want you to say, I know a mess when I see one because I am one. All right, let's say that out loud together. I know a mess when I see one because I am one. So we know a hot mess when we see one because we've been there. And the point isn't to judge. In fact, Paul says, no, we should be silenced because we've been there. He says the point, what God's doing in the middle of that mess is he's bringing us to a place where we realize, man, there's something bigger than me and higher than me. There's a standard, and I can't get out from under it. It's there, and yet it's meeting me in the middle of this mess. And so this week, the next time you find yourself in a mess, whether it's tomorrow, you know, next week, the week after, later today, may you be reminded, and may you be reminded because of what Paul says, because of what C.S. Lewis says, maybe you've seen the movie because of what Mowgli experiences, that whenever we find ourselves in the middle of that hot mess, we're just a step away from acknowledging that there's something bigger and grander, far more purposeful than what I'm experiencing, that God wants to pull me into that place. Let's stand. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I thank you for things like movies. Man, it's fascinating. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, this movie was off my radar, The Jungle Book. I thought it was a kid movie and saw, man, there's a lot of people in our country going to it. There must be something there. And it's amazing how when we observe these things, we see things that connect with popular culture. We realize it's partly because there are threads of your character that are woven deep through them. And God, this morning, wherever we find ourselves this morning, whether we're, you know, in the middle of two messes, maybe we're at a blessed place right now where we can honestly say, I don't have a mess going on in my life. If we're there, God, man, can we just say thank you? We just utter thank you under our breath. And yet, God, if we're in the middle of a mess right now, we've all been there. One of the reasons we know we're in a mess is because we've been there so many times before. And yet, God, I just pray that in the middle of that moment, whatever that mess might be, God, that we would begin to experience that gracious pressing, that gracious power and presence of a loving God who wants to bring a restoration and a healing in ways that we can't do for ourselves. And maybe for some of us, for the very first time, we're going to realize that it's in those moments that I feel that pressure, and I've never known what it is, but maybe it's not God making me feel guilty. Maybe it's just him reminding me that he often meets us right there in the middle.